Afternoon. This meeting of the House Health and Social Services Committee will now come to order. It is 3:02 p.m. on Tuesday, April 24th in Capitol Room 106. Members present are Representative Eastman, Representative Keto, Representative Sullivan Leonard, Vice Chair Zelkowski, and myself, Representative Sponholz Chair, and Representative Johnston. Thank you. Let the record reflect that we have a quorum to conduct business. If you haven't had a chance to do so, go ahead and turn your cell phones off or to vibrate during the course of the meeting. Before we start, I want to thank Butch Carber from the House Secretary from Records and Eileen Keim from the Juneau LIO for staffing the committee today, as well as Ted Madsen, who's the committee aide. All right, and I want to recognize that Representative Tarz joined us as well. Today we have one item on the agenda, and that is Senate Bill 134 by Senator Berta Gardner. Would Senator Gardner and Nathaniel Grabman, staff, please approach, put yourself on the record, and introduce the bill.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Madam Chair, for hearing the bill and members of the committee. And I am Berta Gardner. I represent Midtown Anchorage and Spinard and the UMed District. And the bill before us here today, Senate Bill 134, does not set any new policy. It just simply clarifies existing policy. Under current Alaska statute 2523-180, there are three ways delineated in which, or three reasons that parental rights can be terminated. One is if the child is a child in need of aid, has been subjected to abuse and or abandonment. One is under certain circumstances to free a child for adoption. And the third is when the child is conceived in rape. And we know that that statute actually is effective and is drafted properly. However, it turns out that at least one judge has said that it isn't. And Nathaniel will give you the sort of ins and outs of that discussion. Our purpose is to simply make existing policy abundantly clear. And what we're doing is simply adding the language that in an independent proceeding, somebody who has a child who is conceived in rape can terminate parental rights. In all cases, it has to be under a court order and deemed to be in the best interest of the child. This doesn't apply to a great many children, thankfully, but for the people that it does apply to, it can be very important, and particularly for a woman who is pregnant, following a rape, who is considering what her options are. I think it's very important to be very clear that she doesn't have to be locked into a lifetime with a rapist if she chooses to keep the child. And that's what this is all about. So with that, Madam Chair, Nathaniel Grabman, with your permission, will do a sectional and some other information, and we'll both be available to answer questions.
Chair Sponholz, members of the committee, thanks for the opportunity to present on this bill. For the record, I'm Nathaniel Grabman, staff to Senator Berta Gardner. To flesh out some of that history, in 1987, 2523-180C3 was enacted by the legislature. Looking back at that law coupled with the history of how it was created, it's clear that the legislative intent was to create a mechanism in law to allow a mother to terminate the parental rights of a rapist father. In 2015, Congress passed the Rape Survivor Child Custody Act. That federal law allocates annual grant funding to states which qualify by having existing statute which allows for termination of parental rights in those instances. Alaska has applied for and received additional grant funding each of the last two federal fiscal years and recently applied for the upcoming year. We feel that that's pretty good evidence that the existing law does what it is intended to from the federal standpoint. So then the question becomes, why this bill? As was mentioned before, there's confusion and kind of misunderstanding about it. In 1987, when the statute that is really the gist of this bill was created, there was already termination of parental rights language in statute. And rather than reinventing the wheel, it was thought more efficient to nest the termination of parental rights in cases where the child was conceived through rape statute within the adoption section of law. What that did is it made it so that if somebody weren't specifically looking for adoption and they weren't aware that this existed, they might not be able to find it easily, or might not, it might not be the most obvious piece of law to find. Having talked to some family law attorneys, it's become fairly obvious to us that it's not a well-known law. Some who have practiced for decades have told us that this did not exist, or that there was no mechanism by which a case like this could move forward. So the goal with this bill is simply to raise a little bit of understanding that this mechanism exists in the law, and that I'm trying to make it abundantly clear that this can be done through an independent proceeding which does not involve mm-hmm. adoption or child in need of aid proceedings. Mm-hmm. With that, I can go through the sectional if the committee would like.
Please.
All right. Looking through the sectional, there are 18 sections, but only four of them represent, substantive changes, mm-hmm. and the vast majority of them refer to Section 11. So I'm going to start with Section 11 and then go numerically. Okay. Section 11 just restructures 2523-180C to clarify that termination of parental rights can be ordered in an independent proceeding. And it does this by shortening it a little bit so that the part dealing with that goes from C3 to C2. Then Sections 1 and 2 merely conform existing language elsewhere to move that reference from C3 to C2. Section 3 authorizes the court to appoint guardians ad litem, and that's done to ensure that in a proceeding like this, the child's best interests are considered. Sections 4 through 10, again, conform cross-references to change that based on what is changed in Section 11. Sections 12 through 15, are more conforming language dealing with the changes made in Section 11. Section 16 just adds a new subsection to clarify that an independent proceeding can be used that's not connected to the adoption or child in need of aid proceedings. Section 17 is more conforming language, and Section 18 describes how the changes made by this bill would have the effect of changing court rules. With that, we're ready to answer any questions that the committee may have. In addition, I believe that Linda Bruce, the bill drafter, Tracy Spartz Campbell, the deputy director of the Office of Children's Services, and Nancy Mead, the general counsel of the Alaska court system, are available to answer questions as well.
All right. Are there any questions? All right. Representative Eastman.
Thank you. Through the chair. Now, I'm just curious, this is an area of law I'm particularly well-versed in. If this procedure is used and a rapist father, for example, has his parental rights terminated, does that automatically also terminate any obligation for child support?
It's a good question, and one we asked as well, Madam, through the chair. This is Berta Gardner. It does. And if the parental rights are terminated, the obligations are also terminated. So it's important to note that, first of all, this doesn't happen automatically. It's if the mother wants to do this. And also we learned that it is possible for her to bring a civil case to get child support or inheritance rights and things like that. If she chooses, she may not get it or maybe will. And I think probably Nancy Mead or one of the other legal experts can provide more information about that.
Thank you.
All right. Are there any other questions for the bill sponsor? All right. Seeing none, thank you. I believe that we have in the room, we have Carmen Lowry with ADVSEA. All right, and go on and put yourself on the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Carmen Lowry, and I'm the executive director of the Alaska Network on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. I want to thank you all for the opportunity to speak today. I really appreciate any opportunity to talk about expanding choices for survivors. I want to extend appreciation to Senator Gardner for moving forward with this piece of legislation. We've been talking with her and working with her for almost 2 years to see what could we do that would clarify options that are available for survivors. So in that sense, I have a great deal of confidence and respect that this is an extremely thoughtful and meaningful piece of legislation. I want to share with you all something that one of our staff wrote in reference to why we get involved in some of this work. And this was actually for an amicus brief that we submitted. And one of our attorneys writes this: as a collective voice for survivors of domestic violence and sexual assault, ANDVSA has an interest in representing the needs of survivors of sexual assault in demonstrating the impact of any law on those survivors and their families, and ensuring that current and future survivors are not negatively impacted by law precedent. At the coalition level and through our member programs and affiliates, we work to help survivors' recovery, protect their autonomy, and end the intergenerational nature of violence and limit barriers to justice. And I say that in reference to particular this piece of legislation, just to again to reiterate how important it is to expand options and to clarify options. So we are in support of this Senate Bill 134, and I want to thank you all for the opportunity to testify today. And I'm happy to answer questions if necessary.
All right, thank you. Are there any questions for Ms. Lowry? All right, seeing none, looks like you got off the hook today. Let's see. Do we have, it looks like that's the end of invited, oh, is that Representative Tarr? No? Got a thought?
Well, I would be curious, Madam Chair, of the question that Representative Eastman came up came up with. In a circumstance, I guess, and I'm wondering if OCS might be able to help us with that one, if there would otherwise be any financial resources to support that family outside of traditional social safety net programs. So if she didn't otherwise qualify for Denali Kid Care or adult public assistance, I hadn't considered the point that Representative Eastman brought up with the lack of financial responsibility upon termination of parental rights and whether that could leave, you know, a person in a difficult circumstance without the financial resources to really, you know, be able to support themselves and a child.
For the record, my name is Tracy Sparks Campbell, Deputy Director for the Office of Children's Services. Through the Chair, Representative Tarr, just to be clear, you're asking about the mother, if the rights are terminated, what options she may have for support. Certainly, traditionally within our division, there are department, there's public assistance resources. There are, you know, other programs within the department that could help support her. Beyond that, I'm not familiar, unless they're community-based resources that might be available.
And perhaps we might ask Nancy Mead to come up as well, because I understand that Nathaniel Grabman mentioned the possibility of filing for a civil case as well. That might be another. Could you come up and answer that? Thank you, Ms. Sparks-Campbell.
One other question before you leave, and this will be a dovetail between the two, if I could.
Yeah.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Do you interface with the Violent Crimes Compensation Board at all if there's a circumstance where a violent act has also resulted in a child being taken into state custody? I just don't know if that ever happens.
Through the Chair, Representative Tarr, that is not a normal thing that we do, but certainly we have clients that are involved with that program, and so we will work with them if they're involved. Typically, that's initiated primarily through the legal system. So.
Thank you.
All right, thank you.
For the record, this is Nancy Mead, General Counsel for the Alaska Court System. And can you maybe, through the chair, repeat the question?
Thank you, if I could. Thank you, Madam Chair. the two questions. The first one was about any financial resources for the mother once the parental rights are terminated, if it otherwise creates difficulty, if, you know, could be a situation where she was unprepared, of course, wasn't planning to be assaulted or something. And then question number two is related to, like, the Violent Crimes Compensation Board. Would this, you know, a circumstance like that be a mechanism or Victims for Justice, something like that, to provide that family with additional support outside of the state-funded social safety net?
Through the chair, Representative Tarr, once parental rights are terminated, although the Alaska Supreme Court has never directly answered the question, the termination of parental rights terminates rights and responsibilities of parenthood, and therefore the probability, although there has not been a Supreme Court decision, is that child support would expire. And I know that's not exactly what you asked, but the former testifier was correct in that the proceedings for termination of parental rights, and you can see in your bill on page 6, lines 2 through 6, the statute does specify that it does not affect the rights of anybody to still obtain legal and equitable civil remedies for any injuries and damages arising out of the offender's conduct. And so that is very clear in statute that a person could indeed maintain a civil action for and allege any damages they may have suffered, which may include the support of the child that was conceived of the sexual assault. I think that's quite clear in statute. With respect to the Violent Crimes Compensation Board, when and if there are child in need of aid cases where a violent act is alleged, I mean, the victim of that violent act, whether it's in a China proceeding or in any instance, can go, if there's a criminal case initiated, to the Violent Crimes Compensation Board and receive more or less what I consider to be bridging funds. They receive some immediate help with, for example, medical bills and whatnot, and then later those amounts that are expended on that victim can become part of a restitution order in the criminal case, where the offender then has to repay the VCCB for whatever was expended due to his or her criminal conduct.
Follow up?
Thank you. But there could be a circumstance where a woman wouldn't want to press criminal charges but would otherwise want to go through the termination of parental rights, which would be civil, and they could still file a civil case for damages even if they didn't otherwise file or participate in a criminal case. Is that true?
Through the chair, that is correct. This bill doesn't require any criminal finding of sexual assault or a decision in a criminal court that the offender committed a sexual assault that resulted in the child. So you are correct.
All right. And I believe Representative Sullivan Leonard has a question for you as well.
Thank you. Hi, Nancy Mead. Good to see you. I was looking through some of the research that we have here, and I don't know if you've had a chance to look at the packet. In the Legislative Research Services on page 4, they talk about the federal legislation and talk about the federal dollars that could come in to the state for what they describe as two formula grant programs. One is the Stop Violence Against Women formula grant program, then the other is the Sexual Assault Services program. And I think this kind of ties in with Rep. Tarr's inquiry, and I just kind of want to go one step further. Can you give us kind of an overview of the funding that we may be able to apply for, and then for the victim, how they may be able to obtain those funds?
Through the chair, Representative Sullivan Leonard, this is actually not my area of expertise, how to get the federal funding. As I read this, I knew it was support for the fact that there was maybe some lack of clarity in Alaska's law, but I'm afraid I'm not familiar with the federal funding that may flow to the state if this is adjusted or fixed. I'm sorry.
I believe the bill's sponsor was familiar and referenced that, so I'd like to ask her back up to answer that question. Thank you, Ms. Mee.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Please. Oh, Nathaniel. All right.
Again, this is Nathaniel Grabman, staff to Senator Burtigardner. Also, I am not an expert on this by any stretch, but in the last year, in federal fiscal year 2017, the state was awarded an additional $34,575 for having the 25-23-180C3 law on the books, which allows for termination of parental rights in these cases. And the total amount that was given to the state from the federal government through the Violence Against Women Act, coupled with the Sexual Assault Services Program formula grants, was roughly $1.2 million in the last federal fiscal year. Does that answer the question?
Go ahead. Sure. Just to follow up from that, and that's the information I was looking for.
Okay.
And so for a victim to be able to ascertain these particular funds, would they request a grant application through these programs, or how would they be able to receive some support then through these grants?
I'm not 100% sure.
Okay.
if I have to go out on a limb, I think that this money is additional money that is used for generalized purposes rather than directed towards a specific victim compensation. But we can look into that and get that answer to the committee.
It's possible also that Carmen Lowry with the Alaska Network
Yes.
on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault could also address this, since this is definitely her bailiwick, so
Okay.
I'd like to invite her up and ask her to answer the question. There's a queue growing.
Well, and just a comment, Madam Chair, she's mm-hmm. coming up. I just have a little insight on this particular issue in terms of it going to generalized services, because at one point the nonprofit organization Victims for Justice wanted to try and split some of those funds, because Victims for Justice does work with individual victims. And so I think right now they're going all to the organization, like you're describing, rather than being split out, and that, because that was a part of a conversation before, that they were hoping there would be more dollars to go towards that.
All right. Ms. Lowry?
Yes, for the record, my name is Carmen Lowry with AMDVSA, Alaska Network on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. And to confirm that the federal funds that come in that are specific to the STOP grant and to the SASP go directly to the council, and then the council puts them into, bundles them with other funds, and then they are allocated out to grantees. The ones that are very specific for the SASP, we call that, the Sexual Assault Services Funds, those must be used and tracked correctly for services for sexual assault survivors and for trainings and things related to sexual assault.
Okay.
All right. Thank you. Representative Eastman?
Question for Ms. B.
All right. Thank you. Ms. Lowry.
Thank you. Through the chair, two questions. And the first is, in the case of a civil action for damages against someone who's lost their parental rights under this provision for sexual assault, I assume and want you to confirm, if this proceeding has happened, and someone hasn't necessarily received a conviction of sexual assault, but they lost their parental rights as a consequence of under this provision of sexual assault, is that likely to be given weight in another subsequent civil proceeding when someone's trying to collect for damages? As far as, would that help establish that sexual assault did in fact occur?
Through the chair, Representative Eastman, the bill doesn't create the civil remedy to sue civilly somebody who committed any offense against you and caused any damage to you. So I had pointed out where it makes explicit that this termination proceeding won't cut that short or cut it off. And you are correct. In a civil case, there would be information about the history of the parties, including the fact that there had been a termination of parental rights. I don't think that would be objectionable or excluded evidence, so that it would be something that the parties would bring up and argue about. In a civil case, the burden of proof is just preponderance of the evidence, which is a bit lower than what would have to be shown to terminate the parental rights under here, which is by clear and convincing evidence that it's in the best interest of the child to terminate those rights.
Okay. And follow up?
Mm-hmm.
So I want to take one step back. And in dealing with this particular section about termination of parental rights, can you help me understand how would this section be used, or could it be used if it was not as direct? I mean, we're all thinking of situations where you have a rapist and we're terminating the parental rights of the rapist. If I, as a parent, hire a rapist to rape a child, does that – I'm trying to understand how this law would be applied in an indirect situation. So I see here sexual abuse is covered. I see here sexual assault is covered. I see here you've got numerous provisions. What is this statute currently broad enough to then terminate parental rights if you yourself were complicit or were an accessory or an accomplice but didn't actually, you know, you weren't actually the rapist in that sexual assault? Can you help me understand how that would work or not?
Through the chair, Representative Eastman, I'll try. That is not something that had occurred to me. I think you're zeroing in on the language on page 5, lines 2 through 5.
Yes.
So this allows an independent proceeding on the grounds that, A, the parent committed an act constituting sexual assault, B, sexual abuse of a minor, or incest. So then your question goes to whether if somebody hires somebody to do one of those things, is the hirer also a person who committed that act? And I must say I don't know for sure the answer to that question. I won't speculate. I'm sorry.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. And I just want to clarify something. I want to make sure I clarify an understanding. Thank you, Ms. Mead. Did you have a question for Ms. Mead? All right, go ahead.
Don't go away.
We just can't get enough of you, Ms. Mead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wondered, pardon me if I missed it and I was reading something. Does this happen very often, or do you have a sense of how often this happens? I mean, this is just, I got to think, one of the most difficult, difficult and sad kind of series of events and circumstances. I just wonder if it's happening very often.
Through the chair, Representative Tarz, the sponsor said this ability to bring these petitions has existed in Alaska law for 30 years, I want to say, since the 80s perhaps. We have never had a case since then. So, no, it does not happen very often. I think if it's a stranger sexual assault, other things happen such that there would be no need to file an action against that father in the typical situation, and then for whatever other reason, it just doesn't come up.
All right. Thank you very much. And I wanted to just clarify a point earlier and ask Ms. Lauer to come back up just to clarify a point. It's my understanding, based on the testimony that we've heard today, that that this bill won't necessarily allow us to apply for additional funds or attract additional funds from the federal government, that we're already receiving grant funds. But I wanted to just make sure that we were that was clear on the record. And
for the record, Carmen Lowry with the ANDVSA, and that is correct. It doesn't allow for us to apply for it. Additional funds.
All right. We're already receiving those federal grant funds. All right. Thank you. All right. So we're going to go ahead and open this up for public testimony at this point in time. Is there anyone in the room that would like to testify?
Miles Curtis, Peter.
All right. Miles, you want to go ahead and introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony?
Yeah, Miles Curtis. I'm the father of a rape survivor who conceived the child through rape, and I'm calling from Petersburg today. I'm in support of SB 134. We've been in court in a custody trial for about 5 years now, I'd like to say this is good legislation. The courts, I think, were in error by finding that the old law didn't apply, And there was a question about how many times this might come up in court. See, we were told over and over again by attorneys, and I've consulted with a lot of attorneys on this, that there was no law in Alaska. So you'd have to realize that maybe there's a lot of people that have tried to do this or wanted to do this but don't know that a law exists. So hopefully this law will get out there and people will understand it a little better. There was a few things that were concerning me on the bill that have already come up in court, and specifically there's one item on how the hearing should be held to terminate or find a fact-finding hearing should be held, I think, to determine if the child was conceived through rape, of course. The court that I presented this to combined it with the custody case, and it really complicated things. Actually, the termination hearing was put on a stay for a year and a half for really no real purpose other than there was some things in the custody case that were in the appeals court at the time. And then it was canceled. It was due to be heard in February, but the judge didn't find that there was significant evidence. I actually submitted the findings from Roberta Gardner's office and Senator Coghill's office that confirmed that there was legislative history on the law, but the judge refused to hear it. And anyway, he said he wouldn't do it anyway. So it's a difficult situation for us to. And it really has a big effect on the child and the mother specifically. She does suffer from post-traumatic stress disorder, which is very common in cases like this. And then going through these court proceedings year after year is not helping her situation and putting her in a position where she can be the best mother that she can be. So I'm hoping that you'll find that this law is it's important. You know, it's going to help a few people. And I hope you support it.
Thank you for your testimony. Are there any questions for Mr. Curtis? Mr. Curtis, I want to thank you for testifying today and for working with Senator Gardner's office to try to find a solution so that hopefully others in your family situation will have a more direct and expedient route to justice for their families. All right.
Okay, thanks.
And that's Mr. Curtis is the only person we have actually for testimony, so I'm going to go ahead and close public testimony at this point in time. Are there any amendments? All right, seeing none, is there any discussion? Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, also, just in case Miles is listening, I want to thank him for calling in because it really, when you hear a personal story, has the impact of understanding the importance of the legislation. And just wanted to thank the bill sponsor for bringing this forward. It seems like it's kind of one of those boogeyman stories that you read about, but having just heard from the individual going through the courts right now, it is something that we need to address and help those families in that terrible circumstance.
I agree. Yeah. All right, I would entertain, did you want to make some comments, Senator Gardner?
Chair, just to respond to a couple of the questions. Mm-hmm. After I introduced the bill and there was a little bit of publicity that came out, two different people came up to me in public arenas, one in the grocery store and one was at a big meeting. One of them was carrying an infant, and both of them said that they had children born of rape. They didn't know about this provision, and they thanked me for it.
Wow.
And so I think there is some kind of pent-up need that when it's more explicit and maybe some publicity here when this passes that people will realize, okay, they can do something. And then in answer to a question that Representative Eastman had about if a husband or spouse hired somebody, the provision, and if you look on page 5, section starting at line 2 down to 7, it specifically says it refers to termination of the parental rights of the biological parent as in the child's interest. So this is anticipated to be the biological parent. Mm-hmm. And if somebody were to hire a rapist, that'd be a different kind of crime and a totally different story, I think.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you.
Thank you
very much.
Thank you all very much.
All right. And with that, I would entertain a motion to move the bill from committee.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 134, Work Order 30-LS1182/A from committee with individual recommendations and attached zero fiscal notes.
Is there any objection? All right. Seeing none, the bill moves. and we're not anticipating any further hearings of the House Health and Social Services Committee at this point in time. However, if anything comes over from the Senate and plans change, we'll be sure to let members of the committee know as soon as possible. The time is 3:37, and this hearing of the House Health and Social Services Committee will come to an end.
Thank you.
Thank you, Bob. Well.